Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's
Each week, they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff, too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
That's not cars crashing, Wendell. That's usually Russ's empties falling over. Okay. Yeah.
The lawnmower's hitting the empties in the driveway. Is that what happened?
Hi again, everybody. What a way to start. This is Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with, of course, the one and only Russ Cortinel with the weekly episode of The Suspendables. We're up over 100 shows now. I think we're at 102. And we thank everyone for listening. Of course, we had. I'm in a bad spot here because I hope Gretz does not hear this. Okay. Because as you know,
he's going to hear this.
As you know, I'm the biggest male groupie ever. And we had Gretz on for show 50 and show 99, which all adds up. But I'm telling you what, from day one now, so we're doing 2 years of shows, Russ, 150 a year. And I'm telling you what, now I got to look sideways. Okay, Gretz isn't here. This has been the number one requested guest that we've had since day one when we started doing the show. Russ and I were kind of nervous, you know. We put it all together. Here we go, and all of a sudden you get these emails from everyone going, "You got to get Wendell Clark on, okay? You got to get Wendell Clark, otherwise you guys are nothing." And we're very pleased to be joined this week by Wendell Clark. How are you, Wendell? Thanks a lot for doing this, man.
I'm good, guys. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. You know, when I'm looking at, whenever I do these interviews, I look at your stuff today, and I've known you. I'm probably a bit older than you guys. And I'm saying, I'm not going to ask him about freaking fighting. Okay. His whole life. Okay. He gets freaking asked that his whole deal. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to, hey, what do you think of fighting today, Wendell, and all this shit. Okay. We're not doing that, Wendell. Okay. I got one question for you, Wendell, and I think it'll probably take us through the 45 minutes, okay? You were the great enforcer. You were the mentor to many, many people. You were hands down at your time the best hockey player going. You got drafted in 85, first overall. You end up playing for the Leafs. You end up scoring a bunch of goals. You guys end up getting real close. And you had two roles, you know, goal scorer and enforcer. The toughest job ever, Wendell, for an enforcer has got to be you having to play on a line with one of the mouthiest pricks in the league. That couldn't have been fun for you, Wendell. It could not have been fun.
You're such a shit disturber.
Hey, no. No, well, we didn't know what was going on. I was Russ, 19 turning 20. I was 18 turning 19. And we just, we were probably just listening, yapping, and going off on anybody and everybody. It was... The fun time. I know in a lot of people, when you start in the NHL, you think there's all this pressure, and really you don't know what to expect at 18, 19, 20. So you're just playing and having fun. And we happened to have a little bit of success, especially like we made the playoffs, didn't we, Russ? And it's not like we won a lot of games, but we always played well at home. And that was kind of, you know, every Saturday night, we had a pretty good home record for a team. And so we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, we did. We did play well at home. We were young and we put it all out there. And I think as a young pro, young professionals, it takes a while to get used to your body having to perform at that high level on the road and at home. And we were sure well rested for Saturday nights. we wanted to play well in front of our fans. And then, you know, it as a young professional, you just get used to performing every night and having the expectations. Because when we first start, they give you a little bit of rope, you know, when you have a bad game, and they let us have some rope, some leeway, but. We had fun, man. It was great out there. We went out on the ice every shift, giving it all of it, and trying to score every shift. And And obviously, you did. Wendell did.
Wendell, talk. You know, there's always, you hear all these stories, you know, about Wendell Clark, right? He grew up in Kelvington, Saskatchewan. He could bench press a tractor. Okay, he kicked the shit out of the entire town since he was 7 years old. Right? I'm going, okay, we got to get the guy on. Was it always going to be hockey for you, Wendell? Talk about your youth a little bit and how it all came to be that 1985 number one draft pick.
Yeah. It was basically everybody in a small town, Western Canada, probably every small town in Canada, you played to leave town and not leave town in a bad way. Just that was your way. If you started playing hockey, you left at 13, 14 to move to the city or Wilcox for Saskatchewan, Notre Dame, where Russ and I went. You just kept graduating to get to the next level. And really, it was going to be hockey or moving back home and working on the farm. And the farm was an 18-hour job a day, and that didn't seem as fun as hockey. Like my dad always said, I don't know what time you're getting home, but I know what time you're getting up. You take it.
That was the same as my dad said to me, and I wasn't a farmer. I was just, those were blurry days partying. Yeah. Talk about you guys, Lehman and you and Russ, you ended up there, as you pointed out, in Wilcox and played, the famous Hound Line, as it was called, when you were with Toronto. When you were growing up, Wendell, because I just read a bunch of stuff over the last couple of days about you, and I when guys talk about their legacy, one of the really cool things that stands out is that you were a mentor to so many kids and so many young hockey players coming up, and congratulations for that. I couldn't think of a better accolade, to give a guy. Who was it for you, Wendell?
Not any one guy. I think you get graduating to the next level. You grew up in a small town. You looked up to your senior hockey guys that played. Obviously, your parents are first, mom and dad played a little bit and then coached a lot before I left home. And then, just playing with players, and then you mentor. My mentorship was you get to the Toronto Maple Leaf dressing room, and then it's basically our probably the best player today. But Russ and I played with is Boreas Salming. If he had played on a great hockey team instead of some of the teams in Toronto that he played on, I talked to players that played against Boreas forever, and they put him so high, and we just watched him and watched how he carried himself more than what he said to you. And then I come in, and Russ was already there, and Gary was there, and the Gary Nylands and Bennings and Todd Gill, like guys that were just ahead of me. That's who kind of I attached to getting to Toronto, because that's who are going to show you the ropes. So it's not necessarily Ricky Vibe was our captain. Billy DeLego got traded after my first game. I played my first game in the league with Billy DeLego as my centerman. I got him traded right after the first game. Remember, he stayed in Boston, Russ. He didn't come back on the plane with us.
I forgot about that. Billy D.
Yeah, Billy D got traded to Boston. Game one, he stayed in Boston. We took Tom Fergus back with us.
Wow. I bet you Billy had a few that night.
He probably wore the same suit for a month before he played in Toronto.
Yeah, those were the good old days. You'd take you'd wear your one suit down on a one game road trip, maybe bring a golf shirt to wear to practice before the game. But we all had a little carry on bag.
That's funny.
That was it.
One of my favorite stories. Speaking of suits. One of the cheapest guys, I'm in Edmonton, Wendell. I've been here my whole adult life. And one of the cheapest guys going was Dave Lumley. Okay. Like he was just threw nickels around like friggin' manhole covers, as they say. Kelly Chase and I are doing a gig together and Lumley's there. And, Kelly is drop dead funny. Yeah. And he gets on stage and says, "Oh my God, look at all these people. So nice to be invited. Jimmy, this is great. Thank you, Wayne. And God, I haven't seen guys in so long. And oh my God, there's Dave Lumley. I haven't seen you in 25 years. He goes, "I didn't recognize you, but I recognize the suit." when did you guys come together in Toronto then, the two of you, Wendell, you and Rusty?
Would have been first day of training camp, I guess. That would have been the first time. I think, Russ, I don't think the draft, I don't think you were there. But the first day of training camp would have been when we started hanging out every day since. They're trying to keep me on a good diet there, teach me the NHL diet.
Russ was?
Yeah. Oh, God. chicken wings.
who was the coach then? I forget.
Dan Maloney.
Yeah.
And how was Dan?
Six shooter Dan. He had the like when he was mad, he'd do six shooters. He'd be pointing at you with his fingers, and you just hope he didn't hit you with one of them. I think he was still as tough at coaching as he was when he played. But he and you know what? Dan became he was such a rookie coach, really. He coached the year before, I think, and then a little bit, and then that year, and then Harold wouldn't sign him a contract, and he learned how to be a better coach by the end in Winnipeg. He got to Winnipeg. I think he was a pretty good coach there. So he was learning our first year.
Like we were, Clarkie, we were all coming together that year in the playoffs. We swept Chicago. We lost to St. Louis in seven. And Dan was really coming into his own. He's starting to let people play. He was starting to relax, I think, and settle down. And he understood the European line we had. He understood our line, the young guys and the older guys. And we were getting better and better. And he unfortunately left because he was just becoming an awesome coach with us as a group. And then we got John, and John just came in, and it was totally different. You know, he was fired up, and with John, he's just being John Brophy. But yeah, it's too bad we didn't keep Dan around. And it was, I remember he told me he was making 140 grand and he wanted 180. He wanted a $40,000 raise. He didn't get it.
No, that was Dan didn't get it. Remember, Stevie Thomas got traded, the same $40,000 raise. Maybe 50.
Yeah.
He might have had 100 because I think Stevie was just around 100 and wanted 250 or 220.
And he's scoring 30-something goals.
Scoring 30 goals. And like we had – I always tell people because we went to the semis there that 2 years in the 93, 94.
Right.
But we had as much skill on our 85 to 87 team as we did on our 93 team.
Wow.
We had eight 20 goal scorers or seven 20 goal scorers.
Yeah,
five of them were 30 and up.
Come on, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we had a team. Like skill wise in our defense, we weren't coached defensively. And both our goalies were, you know, Reggett and Bester were 20 years old. Like mm-hmm. It's not like we had a good veteran in his prime. It was Don Edwards came in there at the very end, but. And so we had a young team, it was going in the right direction with all the high picks that they had. It would have been good.
Yeah.
What about Lehman, of course, does one of the best impressions ever of John Brophy. Okay. You can do the whole Mickey Mouse voice and all that stuff. We had Gary on, Wendell, a while back, and he was great. Talk about John Brophy. We've heard many angles on this guy. We've heard some stories that Russ and I have to talk after going, shit, should we leave that in or fuck, we better not put that in to other stuff. What's your experience, Wendell?
No, well, John, I got along great with John, but but the thing with Broph, there's a reason probably was he had the all-time wins in the minors ever, most coached, most wins. Is East Coast and a little bit American League, but he coached like it was game seven war every game. Like from like his first year, he dressed our lineup. Remember Russ, we played every exhibition game.
Yeah.
Like he dressed the lineup and wanted to win right from the puck drop of the first exhibition game. It was,
I think we were 8-2.
Yeah.
Harold was planning the freaking parade.
Yeah. And then we had, remember, we were going into game seven against Detroit in the playoffs, and we were doing down and backs, yeah. Morning skate game seven for a half hour almost, and, you know, probably got too tired. That's why, but he couldn't, and it wasn't, he just couldn't drop the intensity. And that was Brophy. It wasn't that he was a bad person. It's just his intent level. Oh. I think during the games, I remember the doctor used to come in the dressing room and we'd go, who's he? He'd be going straight in the dressing room into the coach's room and he'd be doing Brophy's blood pressure in between periods.
I remember that. Like, you know, he was, you're bang on. He I think he used to take uppers because
he was
pacing. Like, it was unbelievable. Like, he was pacing all around, up and down. And if you watch him behind the bench, the highlights, he's just going back and forth, yelling and screaming and mumbling and stuff. And, you know, pregame skate, for people who don't know, there's 30 minutes of ice time. You're not supposed to stay out there 30 minutes and skate. It's just each team in the morning skate had 30 minutes.
Sure.
And we would be getting bag skated when the Zamboni was coming out because they had to clean the ice for the next team to come out. And they're standing there leaning on their sticks, just laughing and licking their chops going, oh my God, we're going to kill these guys tonight because we're going down and back for the freaking 15th time, you know, a few hours before the game.
Yeah.
Just a nut bar. Johnny was a nut.
How did they coach your line, Wendell? I mean, you guys were so good. You know, you just whipped off those numbers, man, that are just incredible.
We were allowed to play. And really, I got moved from defense to forward. And really, the only – back then in the 80s, there wasn't – maybe Montreal. I'm trying to think of the teams that had real systems. Montreal, obviously. And that's why they consistently won right into the 90s. A lot of teams were like us in Toronto. They never had a consistent like game. Like, if we had a game plan, like, we would have been really good. And really, I was told, you know, I got moved from defense to forward, third guy high. That was your information, totally. And the rest was on innate skill and the players that you played with and reading and probably I broke my foot after about 10 or 15 games and then came back. And after Christmas, that's for me, it kicked in right around Christmas. That's when all of a sudden you felt comfortable.
I'll tell you, as a centerman, and they didn't put us together right away because they wanted him to be with a veteran. They were still working on me. So
no kidding.
We were pushed together. Yeah. We were pushed together. Really, I was playing with Gary Lehman and Greg Therrien, and Clarkie was playing with probably Tom Fergus or like you said, the first game with Billy.
Yeah, because right? Remember Stumpy Stevie started in the minors because he had like 30 minors and 30 in the NHL.
Yeah.
So and then when they brought basically it happened, I think, and when they brought Stumpy up to play wing with Fergie and Ricky, and that's when I went back with you guys.
And then Greg went down to play with he played with Dandao on that line.
Dandao and Walt put up me, remember Walt?
Yeah, yeah. So they, you know, then they put us together and it was so exciting because, you know, you got three young guys and you've got me in the middle and I'm playing with four defensemen. You got to remember, Wendell was drafted as a D-man, so was Gary, and then we had two behind us. So I felt really comfortable defensively.
And, I guess you did, yeah.
But
mixing it up.
Yeah, well, I might have been a bit mouthy, but you know, back in those days, you had to watch yourself because if you spoke to the wrong person and you're not a fighter like I wasn't, you get punched right in the freaking mouth.
Right.
And so we just went out and played real hard you know, I don't even remember ever getting an elbow penalty or cross checking penalty, because if you did that would end up as you having to fight. And so being a non-fighter, I didn't get those penalties. So I wasn't out instigating stuff and then having Clarkie finish it every time for me, but it was sure fun when guys would come after me and Clark, you'd be right in there and freaking kick the shit out of everybody. It sure makes you feel a lot taller than you are when you're on the ice with Wendell. It was good times, and I love to pass the puck, and Clarkie has one of the best wrist shots I've ever seen. I mean, Mike Bossy and Wendell of my era probably have the two best wrist shots in the game. If Clarkie had a second, man, he could pick a corner from anywhere on the ice. And so we made a good, a really good tandem because of that. I loved to pass. And Gary was so freaking talented. Gary could do anything. And And it was a lot of fun. It was definitely a lot of fun. And Wendell brought so much respect back to Toronto, and the fans loved him. Man, we'd get on the ice and he'd get a standing ovation, and you know, with his big hits, his big shot, the odd fight here and there. It was a ton of fun, man. Wendell, it was so much fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was a blast. And that was I tell people when you ask and you do functions and what's the best for hockey, and I always go back, if we could, the 87 Canada Cup is some of the best hockey ever. And I said, that's like the 80s, when we started 80s, early 90s. If you could bring back those rules where it's 6-5, goalies are playing well and they're still 6-5. And you got Hall of Fame defensemen, but just the game and how it was played was fun. Like Russ was strict speed. And so that would drive everybody back, or you had to stay back, or so it just created so much space. And I was up and down, and Gary, he could play off, because Gary is probably the smartest, most talented athlete, any sport, not just hockey, but he would play off something. We'd get back to the bench sometimes, and Gary'd be coaching us, and Russ and I, with our grade 11 education out of Wilcox, would be going, Gary, we might not really understand what you're saying right now. You're probably right, Gary, but we don't really understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, feel our pain when we interviewed him for an hour. It took us that long to figure
high
it out.
High intellect hockey brain, that kid, man. He and Clarky and I, we'd go back to the bench and we'd be pushing each other who had to sit beside Gary, because he would just be reliving every second of the last shift, and we couldn't, we just go out and react and play, and we're like, what the fuck is he talking about? Like, I don't remember that. And so you're just trying to catch your breath, and he was, and fit, man, this guy, Gary was so fit. Like he, if you go watch him today, he's what, 56, 57, and he still flies around the ice in those old timer games. I mean, he's amazing.
Right.
And what Wendell said, that one of the best athletes, maybe the best athlete we ever came across.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy, or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
Wendell, you go to Toronto, a small town guy from Saskatchewan. It's Canada's hockey, is the Leafs. The Habs fans will argue a little bit, but over the years that I've been doing interviews, not everyone liked playing in Toronto because of being under that microscope. You come in there and you got no choice. You're the guy, Wendell, and you're playing in this huge hockey centric city. It's not everyone's cup of tea, Wendell. And how soon did you realize that, oh my God, this, I just want to play. You'd said earlier in the today, I just want to play hockey, but it's going to be way more than that, Wendell. When did you come to that realization? And what did you think about all that when you saw it coming?
Well, it's not bad. I think it's easier to start as a rookie, 18, 19, 20, coming into Toronto, because this is the NHL. That's the way it is, where you watch players get traded there at 28 and they've played in the South in New Jersey or Hartford or Florida. And then you come to Toronto and it's like morning skate. There's 100 people sitting on my car at morning skate, or at the practice rink. Guys are mad that people are sitting on their car at the practice rink waiting outside. I said, that's just the norm. But if you are a player, Russ was, but if you were a player that played on emotion, that loved it, like the ups and the downs, and the like Saturday night in Toronto or Saturday night in Montreal, there's not better places to play. And your emotional players play even better, I think. Just the hype that you got in those rinks in Toronto on a Saturday night, that was fun. Now, there are players that maybe don't want that. You want to play on an Islanders regular season, 6,000 fans, and they like that. There's not that if you're not. But if you're an emotional player that can feed off the emotion of the game, it makes you a better player, I think, because you want that risk reward, but you understand the risk part. But it's so much fun if things go well.
Mm-hmm. I I grew up in Victoria, and my dad would allow us to have homemade. He'd make hamburgers and homemade French fries every Saturday night, and we could sit in front of the TV and eat. That was the only time you could take your food from the table. And we watch Hockey Night in Canada. He'd make a stand for the anthem. And so when I got to Toronto, and Clarkie, I'm sure, is the same, we felt like we were in everybody's basement and living room across Canada, just like we were when we were kids. And it was just so freaking awesome. When you, the smell, I can still remember the smell of the old Maple Leaf Gardens. And I was fortunate to play in Montreal. So I got the feeling of both arenas. And if I was a GM, I'd want the player who wants to be under that pressure of the media and the fans, and the players that don't, I'd have a hard time signing a great player who doesn't want to be in front of that every day. And you got to live it and you got to love it. And Wendell and I just, we embraced it. And Clarkie won a couple dance contests because of it.
Dance contest.
Let's talk about a couple other things. That team was so good. You brought it up, 1993. Thanks, Stevie gave me some info here. Western Conference Final, of course, you guys are up 3-2 in the series. Carey Fraser, everything's highly documented. The high sticking call. Talk about that, Wendell. If it doesn't happen, do you guys, you end up losing that game, and then in game seven?
I don't know if we'd have won in Montreal. We beat them all year. But during that playoffs, Patrick Waugh was also setting records for overtime wins, I think. So he had a run going as well.
Right.
And the high stick, I don't blame the high stick as much as there's two other things that I blame. One, just before the overtime, Glenn Anderson got a penalty that sent us to overtime. So we had to start overtime shorthanded.
Oh yeah.
Had we started overtime 5-on-5, I think we win the game. And Glenn got a penalty with 3 seconds left in the game that the ref didn't have to call. And the high stick, and as a joke, I tell people today, I said, I was pretty stupid in game one. Marty takes out Dougie and I go and fight Marty. I should have just went to the bench and one punch Gretzky because he scored 5 in game 7.
You're going to get a penalty. You might as well take it against Gretzky.
Could you imagine if you did that? If you just went, nope, and went right over to the bench and grabbed, whether it was Gretzky or Yari Curry or whoever was there, just beat the shit out of him.
This guy got 5 points in game 7. So he Gretzky'd us in game 7. But and probably before we got to the series, Curtis Joseph took us to 7 games against St. Louis. He was unbelievable. We were out shooting him 50-20 every game. And it wasn't until game 7 that we won 7-0, but it was 1-0, 2-1. And we should have won that series in 5. And all that extra travel and stuff. And then the travel with LA and us. And LA had the same thing too. We probably beat up LA. And then they had to run into Montreal waiting for you after winning. I think they won most of their games in 5 or 6. And Los Angeles was, everybody knew Wayne, but they had some good young players in that team that nobody knew about yet. And they were just coming into their own. So they were a good hockey team.
You brought up Marty. We had Marty on the show. I don't even think we had to ask a question, Rusty. It's like, hey, Marty, how are you? Flat 1 hour, 60 minutes. And he talked about a pretty, pretty funny thing, Wendell, when if a guy crowded the star, if it crowded Gretz when Marty was on that team, there's sort of setting it up for supposed to be a tough guy on tough guy. Marty said, no, I just go over and stand in front of their bench and go, okay, here's what's going to happen. Okay, I'm going to fucking lambaste your star is what I'm going to do. And I'm not fighting the tough guy. First of all, you fought Marty. How'd that go? How many times did you fight Marty?
6 or 7. My first 2 fights in the NHL in exhibition season were Marty. My first game in Edmonton was Marty.
It was unbelievable.
And my second game in exhibition was Marty.
Oh, my God. You couldn't get someone lighter?
That was my first 2 fights. That was welcome to – I think he went down the list and he didn't see first overall. He's seen, he had 240 penalty minutes in junior. Because back then nobody knew anybody. But remember the game notes, Russ? Game notes were like – So guys, you know, tough guys would always go down the old penalty minute list of rookies that were coming up just to see how they played or what was going on. And so, and I, you know, was running around obviously, but, Marty was my first two fights.
Jesus.
First two fights were Marty.
The one fight with Marty, you hit him so hard, he fell backwards and the bench door opened and
yeah,
he went down. What, you can finish the story, but it's fucking awesome.
No, that was a good bad. Yes, you won the fight. The door opens. You're on top of Marty and he's there heavyweight. But now I'm on top of Marty and he's laying back down on the bench. I'm on top of him and he's their hometown. So every game I played Marty the rest of my life, he was trying to get back. Yeah. Marty is such a competitor and that the door just happened to open during the fight and then he just fell right back in there. And that was just, and then we had another good one in Toronto behind our net, started behind our net, I think in Toronto. And then I had two with Marty when I played with the Islanders and he was in LA and I fought him. We were getting kicked about 9-1 in LA and I fought him in the first period at the end of a shift and he kicked my butt.
Oh no.
And I skated up to him in the third period. At this time, it's like 9-1. I said, we're doing this again.
Oh so, no.
Yeah. And so I said, right. But yeah, so him and I had battles, but I always bad battles that had, you know, if you're a right shot defense when I was a left winger, and if you didn't give or take, there was going to be a battle. And that's how Marty played. And he got a lot of ice and then became a player.
Yeah, he came in, wasn't much of a player, and he really developed into a decent player.
He did
player.
A good job developing himself.
Yeah, he didn't just come in and fight. And, you know, a lot of players in that era come in, and they didn't work on their game. They just went out and fought, and that was it. But Marty wanted more out of the game, and he got it.
Did you like fighting, Wendell? I mean, it may sound like a stupid question, but not, you know.
I didn't. Well, you know what? I never had a fight in junior. I had one in the dorm at Gunner Dorm in Wilcox during dorm jobs at the end of the night, an old boy when I was a new boy. But other than that, I never had a fight till first year junior.
And then, oh, no kidding.
That was it. I wasn't going to fight. And then wouldn't fight one game. We were down to three defensemen and Joey Kosher, actually a teammate. We grew up at home together all the way and he stuck and he pounded about three guys that night. You know how tough Joey was in the NHL. Well, now take that back to junior where he could score 40 and nobody would go near him. And so when he stuck up for me, I said, nobody would do that again. And so I learned how to fight.
Did you tell me this story that you didn't fight when you were, because your mom was a teacher at the school and you weren't, if you fought, you'd have to answer to Les, your dad, when you got home? Was that?
Well, she used to teach at school, but no, growing up in a small town, if anything happened at school, then I was going to get it way worse at home. We used to fool around or do whatever in the principal and we just hold our hand out and say, hit us here because it'll hurt way more at home. So you can just hit as hard as you want. The old days when you used to get the strap.
When Wendell and I played at Wilcox together, he was a first year midget. I was second and he was playing defense and he freaking hit guys. Like they would almost come out of their skates. It was unbelievable. I've never him and this Matt Cote, they could lay guys out. It was awesome. And Clarkey, so I knew he was a really hard nosed defenseman who had a great wrist shot. He could pick the top corner from the blue line. Boom. Every time. If he had a second. So I knew all that. And then of course, you know, I leave, play junior, get drafted, make the Leafs. He goes back to Wilcox, plays junior, gets drafted. Boom. We're together. And he freaking starts fighting. I look over him going, when did you start doing that? And said in junior. And I go, holy shit, that is freaking unbelievable. And so for me, it was a huge shock. I knew what type of player Wendell was, but the fighting thing was just freaking amazing. I mean, I had the best freaking seat in all of the NHL to watch Wendell's fights his first couple of years. It was just phenomenal. And Wendell was so tough that we were playing in Detroit and we had a 5-on-5 brawl. And Basil McRae had me in a headlock and was lifting me up and down. I was all of about 172 pounds and he kept lifting me up and I was choking. And Clarkie was freaking hammering Bob Probert. And he yelled over while he's fighting Bob Probert and said, "Basil, leave him alone or you're next." And he let me go.
Once again,
that's how tough Clarkie was back in those days of playing together. Man, it was awesome. And it gave us so much room. His ability, his clean checks, body checks on the ice, they were clean. Shoulder, hitting the chest, like his dad taught him how to hit properly. And if somebody didn't like it and they wanted to fight, he'd back it up. And it was good for me, man.
Did you take boxing or anything, Wendell? Or it just came naturally how to throttle a guy?
You get hit enough in the face, you figure it out, you better give something back.
What? I got to ask you, of course, the game has changed. You know, you were the player you were, was like the perfect hockey player. You know, you have skill and talent and offensive ability and a tough guy. The other day, there was another story, Wendell, and we want your opinion on this. A kid's come out now, part of a class action suit, saying he was molded to fight, even to the point where the coach said, if you don't fight, you know, you're not going to be part of the team. And secondly, they put him in a gym, speaking of boxing every day. Some of this stuff now is going back to 1974 that they're talking about guys coming forward saying, I'm old here. There was some liability on the problems I've having concussion wise. What do you say to all that, Wendell, today?
Well, I have a hard time with it because all the players that I knew that were playing junior that were fighting into pro, they liked doing it. Because if you didn't like doing it, you wouldn't be any good at it.
Right.
Like you, and so when players are scared to fight, it's usually you're too old, which, you know, why, it, you know, that's where I have a lot of respect for Bob Probert at 35 years old. He was still fighting the next 20-year-old heavyweight coming in, which is unbelievable. That's mental toughness through the roof, mm-hmm. what Bobby was doing. But most guys by 27, you've stopped fighting or you're holding on. You get in a fight, but you want to wrestle. You, it's a disguised fight.
Right.
You're not really there to hurt the other guy. You're just there to last as long as you can. But if you didn't like it, you wouldn't have taken, if that's how you were to make, you wouldn't have played a game. Like when I hear players say that I wasn't going to be, if they made me fight, well, and Russ knows our fourth line in junior couldn't skate. They may as well have left their shoes on. And when I'm there. And then your fourth line in the NHL, you could tell what they were there for. And then like today's hockey is so good. Like I remember our, you could tell in when you had our American League team and our NHL team, you could pick the 17 guys just by watching the 40 guys on the ice. You'd pick the first 17 who could play. If you don't know the names, where you put our Marlies on the ice today with the Leafs with no names, all these kids can skate. Even like I'm not saying they have great hockey sense and they're not made never play pro hockey, but they can skate, they can shoot, they can. Your fourth line on your Marley team can skate. Like it's hard to recognize. And then once the game starts, it all the level playing field. You see who's good, not practice, but the game. That's where guys come to the forefront now. But to get back to your question, I couldn't blame the league because if I didn't want to fight, then I have to get another job. If that was my job to be a fighter to stay in the NHL, and now then get another job. Like you stop after 5 years. Okay, this isn't fun anymore. I got to change it. Don't blame the system because that's you want to be there or you're not there at all. But that's just me.
You're so right because just looking back, there was so many good players in the minors that were big and strong. And the reason they weren't in the NHL was because they didn't want to fight. They were good enough, but they just needed a little more edge. Like they had to be a little tougher and they had to back it up and they weren't willing to do it. And so they didn't play. And the guys who would fight gave them some more opportunities. My brother Jeff came into the league fighting and then developed his game and then didn't have to fight as much as he, as his career went on, because he got better, but it sure helped him get in.
Yeah, no. And it, and that really, now the fighting parts changed in the NHL. Like my son's in the American League, and I watch, and he's with Washington and he's in Hershey. And I said, if I watch your lineup, I said, Cody, you're trying out for the fourth line. So figure out how a fourth liner plays, because you were a skill guy all the way, you know, minor hockey and then through junior. But I said, in order to make the Washington Capitals, you're not taking Ovechkin's job. He's not a bad hockey player.
Yeah. But, you know, what, so, go ahead. Sorry, Wendell. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, but you're – and a lot of – like Russ was saying, a lot of players don't want to change their game to get into the NHL. And then once you're in, you can develop yourself, and now you've – your skill takes over like Jeff did, and you start playing the other side. But you may, to just to get in to make that team, you may have to make play a different role. You know, probably one of the best guys that changed his role, I think Guy Carbonneau was an offensive 150 point centerman coming out of the Quebec League, but he's not taking Jacques Lemaire's place in Montreal, so he becomes the best defensive centerman for 10 years in the NHL. Like,
right
he had to change his game. He couldn't just no I just want to always get points. And a lot of players that don't ever make it, they have skill, but they won't change. They won't adapt to what, and even, you know, Russ, you know, you went from center to, you know, I got to play wing on this good team now later in my years or whatever it is. And you have to adapt. I remember coaching the kids when I was coaching Cody all the way up, and the parents, you know, his parents in Toronto, oh, my son's a centerman. And I said, no, your son's a forward. He'll play where I put him. And they're going, no. And the only thing I would say to them is, I said, if you're going to make the junior team, college team, or pro team, do you want to try out for 12 positions or four? Because if you're stuck on center only, and you tell a guy in junior, coach in junior or college, okay, see you later, you're not good enough. But if you say, I'll play left wing, and then when there's somebody goes down, you slide over to center and you prove something, you've made it.
Wendell, Rusty told some great tales about when he coached, how he, you know, how he handled the same thing that you said. These kids all come in, they all want to be in the first line. Well, let's do the math. You know, you can't be, he did some wonderful, hilarious things with kids where he made them go out there without a stick sometimes. What's your worst experience with parents, Wendell, when you were coaching? You know, you were a player, of course, and then you get into that and you talk about
I don't have any. They demand things, and then the worst is, and then they say something in November that you did to their son, and you said, I'm just teaching them how to play. Then at the end of the season, the boy is getting all that ice time, but in Toronto, the players already move on. Like, there is no tryouts every year. At Christmas of the year before, you already know where you're playing the next year.
Right.
And so the parent took his kid off the team for next year. And end of the year, he goes, well, how come you're playing him lots now? I said, well, that's credit to your son. He figured out how to play by getting coached. But you yanked him off the team at Christmas. He has to finish the year, but and moved them. You wouldn't let him develop. You just had to have it in October. And because one of the little tricks I did, I know the association didn't like it because you didn't make as much money. I just remember, I always coached like I was playing. So I only ever ran eight forwards, not nine. And I only had 5D, not six. And if anybody got hurt, I never called anybody up. Because Russ, you remember, if you ever had like seven forwards and 4D, that was so much fun as a kid. Like you never get off the ice. And so by running eight forwards, everybody played wing or center. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3. I did the numbers. And so everybody kind of played a different position. And you always had your skill guys on the ice.
I want you to be my coach. Mine wasn't like that. Yeah, that'd be a lot more fun.
And then as a coach, it took it off my plate that, you know, end of the game, I got to get the best guys. Well, you already do have it because you're short. You start with a short bench. And in Toronto, which is same in Ottawa, maybe a little different in the States. Out west, it was different. When we played, you had 3 20-minute periods as a kid. Well, in Toronto, you had 2 12s and a 15. Well, if I was 10 years old, I could have played the whole game. That's a 12 and a 15. I didn't have to come off at all.
Never come off. Yeah.
Clarke, Boris Dorochenko, who I've become very close with, he coached Austin Matthews, my kid, and a bunch of other kids. but he based in Arizona. And he had the same philosophy, but his was a little different. He would tell the kids, like, the first five up, they at the face off, he goes, whoever gets to the position first, that's what you're playing for the rest of the shift. And the parents gave him shit, and they didn't. And in broken English, he would say, look, if your kid can learn to play all these different positions, just what you, and just backs up what you just said, he has a better chance. But Austin, if you, when next time you're talking to Austin, ask him to tell you stories about Boris. Boris is a phenomenal skating coach and a guy from the Ukraine developed a kid from Arizona, and he's become the player he is today, which is just a great story. Probably a movie, actually.
Well, you think of it, he hasn't, and he's not, he played everywhere. He started in Arizona, and then you're playing in Switzerland at a youngster rather than junior, yep. Or you, not even the U.S. program. He went to Switzerland and not yep. Canada or the U.S. program, then came back, and he is just coming into his own now. Like yep. he started as a big guy with skill and so much skill, but now he's strong. So now the defensemen, they have a hard time handling him because mm-hmm. he's not scared to lean on you. Yeah. Or you lean on him, it doesn't bother him. He's figured that because he's now strong. Like, you can be yeah. a big 18-year-old, but you're not 22. Where now he's 22, 23 years old. Now he's strong. You're not going to affect him. Nobody in the league affects him now.
Right. I was coaching spring hockey in British Columbia. And we were 13. And Austin was 11. We were in a tournament in Whistler, and I announced to the head coach, I was an assistant coach. I announced to them that we're getting the best player from the United States at this age category. Cause that's what Boris told me. Cause they traveled all around the US. He played in the Bean Cup, and he said he's the best player in the United States right now at his age. And I announced and Austin gets out on the ice. You could see every parent like eyeing him up and down, looking at him. And he was, you know, a little clumsy because he's 11 and he's big. And he had, like, I think he had 4 goals and 2 assists. So after the game around the fire that night, having beers, the parents came up and were like, well, what do you think of my kid? What do you think? You know, how do you compare him with this kid?
I mean, he's no good.
Unbelievable. Like, Austin used to stay at my mom's house in Victoria in the summer, and they traveled around with Boris all over the country for these hockey schools in the summer. And this kid's just, he's an amazing kid. And he looks like he's just carried on. His parents have done a great job.
Let's, you brought up your son, Cody Wendell. Talk about that. We get to follow Lawton, Russ's son, who's right there, you know, in that sort of, that heart attack zone for a parent of going, how's this going to go for my kid? How is it for your son, Cody? What can we expect?
Yeah, no, he's that 23. Like, he started out getting drafted into junior. He was 5'6". Wow. And then now at 20, he's 6'3".
What?
So he went from, I asked my wife, who was the male guy in Tampa?
that's good.
So he went to a tall, skinny guy, and he started getting injuries because you're a tall, skinny, and now you're growing up playing junior, and you're a Clark, and now can you play tough? And he right. never, that was never his MO. He was always the little guy. And now when he got through junior, now this year I noticed a lot of strength, but he's had a little bit of a neck injury on and off for the last few years. And so he's only ever played 40 games a year kind of thing.
Right.
So, and a lot of it, I think, is just getting strong enough. Like, you're so skinny and you get a couple injuries early, and you just got to get stronger. And the game right. is so fast. He can skate and see the ice. I always ask him why he's passing if he can shoot it. <All
right>. Wendell, let's talk about, God, I just love this. I love this back and forth between you and Russ. If you scored, Rusty, if you scored 46 goals, okay, mm-hmm. 1 year, okay, you scored 46. Say it's 1994, okay? And then everyone gets together and go, yeah, we got to fucking trade this guy, okay? We got to get rid of him. That was, of course, I'm being facetious. that was your deal, Wendell. That's hard to believe when you see those numbers, that you were traded after, you know, 9 years in Toronto and you've scored 46. And they, what was that phone call like for you? You must have thought they were joking.
Well, I got traded. Well, no cell phones unless you had the bat phone there back in 94. And you're
right. Yeah. Right.
So I was actually coming back in from Mississauga. I was filling up from gas. Russ would know this. I was filling up with gas at the Esso station right across the street from the Molson Brewery.
Yeah.
Bathurst Street there.
Yeah, paying homage.
Yeah. And so I turned the radio on to see who we drafted because I got traded at the draft. And that's when I heard that I got traded to the Quebec Nordiques as on the radio. Nobody could get a hold of me. They didn't know where I was. They're leaving messages at home. So that's how I had found out. And I think Cliff Fletcher at the time, Quebec had, they just finished that deal with Lindros. So in Quebec, they had Sakic, Sundin, Forsberg, Deadmarsh, and there's one other center. Oh, and Ricci were their five centermen. And so they were giving it up some to get a winger because you couldn't give that much ice time to that.
Yeah, it's too much.
Too many good centermen. And so, and at the end of the day, I got traded for a Hall of Fame centerman.
Yeah, right. That was a hell of a trade.
So it worked out. It didn't work out initially for the Leafs because after I got traded and then you got Mats, then the whole team had to get built around Mats. It all, Dougie ends up getting traded and it was all a big turnover, but they got their big centerman that could play there 15 years and be a Hall of Famer type thing. So that was, that worked out for the big Swede. Mats a good guy.
Were you pissed? Were you hurt by that? I mean, you'd done so many great.
It was the first time I probably wasn't in rumors for a while. About getting traded because while I was hurt earlier on, I was always, even rumors of going to Montreal back in the late 80s, early 90s. But there was no rumors then. And that's usually when it's too quiet, that's when it's something bad happens.
When it's quiet, it's loud.
The shit's going to hit the fan.
And then, and really, after Gretz gets traded out of Edmonton, nobody's surprised. Nobody has the right to be surprised anymore. Right. When the best player in the game can get moved, none of us can be surprised.
Right. This is we've heard it, you know, a million times, of course, right? Since 67 when the Leafs won the Cup. There's been many, many years that have been just heartbreaking for Toronto Maple Leaf fans. And you'll hear it going into the playoffs. Yep, this is their year. They got a deep lineup. They're pretty thick. They got, you know, good goalies going hot. What do you say about this year, Wendell, about your Toronto Maple Leafs?
No, I don't. I'm hoping we're good enough to go a long ways. I think we have to prove our biggest thing is because we've been in the playoffs, you know, with this group of young guys now, like Austin's 5 years, Marner's 5 years, Nylander's 4 or 5 years. So these young guys aren't young guys anymore. And they're our leaders. I feel bad. John Tavares got hurt and he's gone for one round or two anyway. And it's their time. And if they ever figure out how to get out of the first round, like they get through this first round, we're going to be hard to beat because they'll have figured out that first hurdle that for the last 3 years we've lost in game 6 or 7 in the first round. And this is a big year and we deserve, like, we're good enough to get through the Canadian division, and we just have to prove it. The guys have to prove it. They're good enough. They're there. They've got a deep lineup. They're quality players, quality people. So they just have to prove it. And I think if they get through that first round, then they'll have said, okay, we know how to do this now.
Right. Jimmy is sending this to the Oilers right now.
Fuck my Oilers. Jesus, why'd you bring that up? Hey, speaking of that, Wendell, are they getting out coached here? They shut Draisaitl and McDavid to 0 points, not only in the first game, but they did in the second. And then they blew a tire there last night. Is Winnipeg doing the right thing? I mean, that's obvious, but are they out coaching them?
The thing about Winnipeg is they were all hurt at the end of the year. And Winnipeg has the best, they could be the best six forwards. Like they're better than Edmonton six, they're better than Toronto six. Mm-hmm. It's just they play in Winnipeg, so you don't hear about them. They're like, I'm not saying they're a McDavid, but when you take the six of them, that's a good group of forwards they got, and they got the best goalie in the league. And their defense is big. Like their defense are big guys. So they're hard to play against. But they have, their forwards are a lot better because it, you know, remember playing Dale Hawerchuk and those Winnipeg Jet teams, and you wouldn't think much of them, but if they didn't have to meet the Edmonton Oilers every year in the first round, they'd have had some playoff runs in the '80s,
yeah.
But they ended up playing either Calgary or Edmonton, who are really good.
Yeah.
But Winnipeg's a really good hockey team. They were just, their last 3 weeks, they were either injured and not playing well, but their goalie is like, he's the best in the game, I think.
Right. Wendell, this was great, man. Thanks a lot for doing this. You've fit the bill here for how many people. I dare say, Rusty, it's going to be our biggest show ever. Okay. It's going to be, the downloads are going to be unbelievable. Tell us what you're doing these days, Wendell. I know you're in the restaurant business. It says it's probably a terrible thing to bring up during COVID and all that. How are you spending your time these days?
No, I moved. I live right down beside the arena in a condo, but 15 months ago or 14 months ago, I moved to the cottage because of COVID times. You guys aren't really shut down, or you're up with Canada with me, but Russ is down in California where he's golfing and showing off. And I just on the golf course 2 days ago for the first time. But really living out of the cottage for the last 14 months, doing a ton of Zoom stuff. Now the game's going with the Leafs Zoom stuff. But really that's been it. And when it starts going back, just doing function related stuff across Canada for the Leafs in Ontario and Toronto. And then throughout Canada, doing a lot of different stuff through Jackson events and stuff, got me
right
all over the place and other people, but mainly through Andrew Jackson events and just different, like it's hockey crazed East Coast to West Coast. So it's fun just talking hockey and being around hockey fans.
He's on a first name basis with the drive through gal at Tim Hortons with him, he and his dog. I know that much.
Yeah.
I follow Denise on Instagram, and you guys are going through Tim Hortons, getting your dog. Where do you get your dog at Timmy's?
Oh, he likes the birthday cake Timbits.
There's a couple of funny Instagrams where Clarky's trying to finish his muffin, and this dog. What's the dog's name?
TJ.
DJ, yeah. TJ. Get it, Clarky. I'm like, I don't know if a dog should really get his face in there one more time. He might get a right.
Well, it's better than having Russ as your pet. Okay. You wouldn't get out of a liquor store. Okay. You'd like the birthday liquor store.
Costco.
Wendell, thanks a million, man. This is great. We really appreciate you coming on, and the playoffs are here. I know you talked about Toronto. Who's going to be tough there, Wendell? We got to get your predictions before you go. First of all, what do you think of that Northern Division thing? Some people are floating they should do it all the time.
I don't know if they would because of the time changes with East to West. I feel really bad for the players this year that they don't have any atmosphere to play in. Like they're missing. Like imagine playing Russ back in the day. You get to play Montreal 8, 9, 10 times in the atmosphere that would have been in those buildings in a division. So. And the fans got to miss this, but I think the NHL is seeing that these double headers are pretty good. Like right. You play Friday, Sunday in a town, you fly in, it's almost a little bit like baseball where you stay there and play two games just to get a rivalry thing going. I think it's good. I think the league likes that. I know it's turned out pretty good, up here north of the border. But as far as the NHL goes in the Stanley Cup playoffs, I don't know. Stanley Cup winners, you can never count them out. You know, they know how to do it. And Tampa's right there again. And Vegas is strong. Minnesota's giving them a battle. I don't know if anybody's better than Colorado when they're hotter. That's probably the best first line in hockey in Colorado right now.
So shaping up to be good playoffs.
All the playoffs. How many playoffs? Every night there's a couple of games during overtime. Yeah. So it's crazy. Some good hockey.
Yeah, it's good.
Looks good, except for your Oilers, Jim. Oh.
You know what? If any, like they always say, if any team can come back from 3-0, sure. Yeah, we'll see. Wendell, thanks a million. Yeah, man, we really appreciate it. What's the weather like? You're good? You're up in the Muskokas?
Yeah, they're blue sky, 25 degrees today. Perfect day.
Oh, nice. +3 here in Edmonton. Beautiful. Yeah, it's about the same. Take it easy, Wendell. Thanks a lot. We'd love to get you on again. Really appreciate it.
Take care. Thanks, guys. See you, Russ. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Best to the family, Clarky.
All right, you too. Take care.
Well, Rusty, your boy was good. Okay. Can everyone pipe down now? Okay, fans. We got Wendell Clark on.
Here we go.
He was super chatty, Rusty.
He's great. Clark, yeah. he's got a lot of great things to say. He's passionate about the game, and he's just a wonderful, wonderful guy.
And he hardly said, even when I tried to sort of get his opinion about the fighting and all that, he hardly says anything negative about the game. Loves it today. No. Loved it then.
Yeah.
Loved he's every got- second he was on the ice. Loved fighting. It was just, it was good. Couple shout outs. We've had a lot of people, more and more actually, as each week goes by, who've sent us emails and stuff like that. Let me read one here, Rusty, before we go. Hi guys. I'm fan number 101. Okay. I want to thank you for the laughs, insight, and entertainment, especially during the pandemic. Russ and Jimmy have such a great rapport and humor, a large part of what makes the show work. My husband introduced me to the podcast, and we would listen together, and now I listen on my own. There we go. Each episode makes me smile and laugh and gives me insight into the world of hockey and more. I always like the end more. I grew up in Calgary before hockey was a thing there and met my hubby of 36 years when he moved there from Ontario. As a diehard Leafs fan, I was a hockey widow starting at the ripe old age of 16, but grew to love the game, especially after moving to the Toronto area and was there during Russ's time as a Leaf. Now living in BC, we wear our Leaf logo with pride. Episode 100 made me laugh out loud in my car when Russ proclaimed that he didn't buy his wife a Mother's Day gift because she isn't his mother. My hubby has been saying that for 36 years. I don't get him a Father's Day gift, but do thank him for being an awesome father. Just saying. We love the show. It's the only podcast that isn't crime related that I listen to, but then you've covered that sometimes in ways too. My hubby's grandfather was a caretaker for many years at Notre Dame in Wilcox, Saskatchewan. So these stories are always appreciated as well. All kidding aside, Russ and Jimmy are good people who care about others and show it with words and actions. Please keep up the great work, and please, please get Wendell Clark on the show.
There you go. We did it.
There we go. Absolutely.
Lina.
Yeah.
Don't fuck it up. She said
in her words, we quoted her. Yeah.
Cheers. Spells it L-Y-N-A, pronounced Lina, and don't fuck it up, Jimmy, you piece of shit. Oh, no, Jesus. She didn't say that part.
Okay, yeah, that's enough of that, please. Okay, you're doing so well. We couldn't get him to swear, Wendell Clark.
No,
you got that covered. Okay, Rusty, we got it in the books. Fantastic, another great show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We're going to be, we really want to thank Wendell. He was great, chatty, had lots to say. It was fantastic. What a great guy. Rusty.
Yeah, he's
unbelievable
awesome.
Guy. Yeah. And we'll be back next week with another show. And more guests are coming, folks. Don't panic. But we've brought you some good ones. Go back and listen to all the shows, suspendables.com. They're all up there. Rusty, plus three here. Okay. I just want to throw my jacket on and a sweater. I'm gonna go for a walk. What is it there in LA?
It's hot.
That's enough. Thank you, Rusty. That's all we needed. Yeah, that's
good. It's sunny and beautiful.
That's it. Shut up. Okay. Another show in the books. Over 100 now, Rusty. Gotta nice. Keep rolling. And we'll be back next week, of course, with another episode with Russ Cardinal and me, Jungle Jim Jerome. You've been listening to The Suspendables. Talk to you later, Rusty.
See you, pal.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Cardinal and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.